Coming up on this week's front page, Constitution Hill's magnificent flat debut, the Grand National waits, and the latest stalemate at the top of British racing. Hello and welcome to the latest edition of The Front Page, the show in which we chew over all of the biggest topics from the week that was. And there were no bigger stories last week than Constitution Hill's successful flat debut at Southall. We'll get straight into it in the company of Matt Rennie and Chris Cook. Chris, start with you. What did you make of his performance and the whole occasion?
Constitution Hill ran last week, did he?
You must have missed that? It. There's been no coverage at all.
Yeah, well, it went well, thank goodness. I was kind of worried because, you know, I'm firmly in the camp of not really having the mental steel to watch this horse try hurdles again. So I wanted it to go well so he would stick to the flat. And you couldn't have hoped for better, really, could you? I mean, it's a bit of a trap race. Even if you've got a high-quality older horse, you know, you and I, we've seen lots of those races where, you know, he's on the flat, taking on horses that are well below his rating or his theoretical ability. But it's, you know, it's a sort of quiet race somewhere, and they never end up looking as good as they should, you know? Lots of Ormonds and Jockey Club Stakes and races like that, you know, when you've got a class animal and they just don't run like you hope, they end up nicking it by half a length or maybe even getting turned over. He absolutely turned on the afterburners and looked properly special. So hopefully that's going to be decision made.
Yeah, Matt, they went there looking for answers and looking for some sort of certainty and some sort of guide on what they should do with him. Did it make their decision harder, the manner of his victory and how good he actually was?
From what we've been hearing, yes. Nicky spoke at length and very well to the press at Kempton on Saturday, saying that they bear a cross of responsibility. And obviously we saw what Michael Buckley said over the weekend as well about how he's fancying a trip down under at the end of the year. But so the inclinations I got from that is maybe the flat campaign is being lent towards too. But when you're talking about head over the heart and the rule and that, and they do think he, as Michael Buckley said, he did think he's probably the best hurdler out there still. There will be definitely that temptation to go. I'm not as sort of, personally for me, I'm still stuck at a crossroads really with it.
Okay.
And I'm sure quite a few people are.
Because of all the great races he's run over hurdles in the last year?
Yeah, definitely isn't that. I'm still clinging on to that 2023 Champion Hurdle was brilliant. I think it's 80-20 for me at this stage. He got to stay on the flat. I think regarding the flat, we probably don't, I wouldn't be expecting to see him in May or anything like that, because he has been in training throughout the winter, hasn't he? I know he's not been on the race course, but he has been doing extensive, well, we've been told, schooling work. He was tuned up to running a fighting fifth hurdle.
I mean, he didn't look like he was in need of a break, did he, on Friday?
No.
I was just a bit surprised when I heard the Melbourne Cup floating into the conversation, because
so was I.
If he's a class horse, then why are we thinking about handicap, first of all? And then he's a 9-year-old. So why is your big target nearly a year away? I mean, strike while the iron's hot. He's in good form now. There's races for him in April and May and maybe even June. So they don't want to run on lightning fast ground.
You rarely get that in May these days.
Well, I mean, there's going to be lots of races, thanks to the good old British weather, where there's plenty of cut. And maybe even at Royal Ascot, that does happen sometimes. And if you're there and, you know, race fit and ready to go, what greater thrill could there be in this flat season than Constitution Hill showing up at Royal Ascot? You know, there'll be a race for him somewhere.
Does it not feel as though they're slightly spitballing ideas? It seems as though they were almost caught off guard as well, because we've had essentially every race has been mentioned apart from the Mongol Derby for him, pretty much.
That is a good option, though.
Yeah, he'd stay the trip.
I think no one expected him to win in the, as much as we thought, well, I don't know, I never thought about him winning by 9.5 lengths. I don't know about you. It was almost unthinkable to me before, and I thought if he wins, it'll be a gritty performance, 3.5 lengths maybe at max. But he's absolutely demolished them. And
first race on the flat for, you know, on the all weather as well. And there's some decent animals. I mean, there may be not much depth to the race, right? I do understand why some people are out there going, hold on a minute, we could be getting misled here, but you couldn't really realistically ask for anything more impressive. And, you know, so what's the next thing? You know, try a listed, you know, try a handicap from a high rating. And you know, somebody mentioned the John Porter, so Group 3, and
That's probably about the right level, isn't it? Group three.
You can totally see that. And you know, a mile and a half probably going to be about right for him, isn't it, by the look of it?
Yeah, I can't see the staying trips because he does have that turn of foot. I could see him doing quite well over a mile
horse.
And a half.
Why not?
He could do John Porter. That's the one at the Greenham meeting, isn't it, in April?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And if they really wanted to test him out at a staying trip, build up by another 2 furlongs, go as biased as I would be, go for the Yorkshire Cup at the Dante meeting.
Oh, you're talking.
Yeah, and then you can
get... What a reception you get in Yorkshire.
Oh, brilliant. I think you'd nearly end up selling out that Friday for Dante meeting, which has a good crowd anyway. Maybe not sell up, but you get a heck of a load more people than you usually would do for that day.
Well, we're not getting ahead of ourselves a bit here, because there is still the question
of the show, isn't it?
You know, the first question is, will he run in the champion hurdle? That is still live for now. Just talk to me about how you see the pros and cons of that, because to my mind, it would be, as a journalist, I'm thinking, it would be an exceptional story were he to run in the champion hurdle.
You said
hurdle.
The biggest story you've ever covered.
Yeah, were he to run in the champion hurdle win the champion hurdle, which, you know, there's this odd acceptance that if he runs, he wins, which I'm not entirely convinced of because it's a jumping game. But at the same time, let's assume he runs in it, he wins. That would be biblical. It would be so good. An amazing story. I suppose the flip side of that is it has the potential to be a catastrophic story were he to run and were it to go badly. How do you view that dilemma that Nicky Henderson and Michael Buckley have?
Well, it's huge, really, because if Constitution Hill was to run in the champion hurdle or win the champion hurdle, he might lead the sport bulletin on ITV News for winning it.
He should do. If the sports broadcaster doesn't want to lead with that story.
If the worst was to happen as well, he'd unfortunately probably lead the ITV News sports bulletin because of that, and it's all about the optics, isn't it, really? And in today's era as well, as much as we don't like saying about it, and some people might, you know, castigate it as woke or whatnot, but as a sport, we have that social responsibility, I think, at this stage. And if something like that happened to Constitution Hill, it'd be pretty disastrous.
I mean, the responsibility clearly is a thing. I understand why some, you know, long-standing jump racing people get very annoyed about the idea of making a decision out of fear. I don't think we're advocating that. But I mean, to me, looking at the way the horse ran last year, he's remarkable as it may seem, he's just lost his confidence for hurdling, hasn't he? I mean, what he did at Newcastle after what we were told was an awful lot of remedial work to try and get him going again. That was just scary.
Are you not a bit encouraged? Yogi Bryson has been working with Nico. These little subtle differences, is there not part of you that is fascinated to see?
It's interesting about putting the extra stride in and everything. Yeah. But I mean, from what we're told, the schooling at home was never the issue. You know, it didn't go wrong there. But it's when you get to racecourse conditions, suddenly there's a part of him that's going, what on earth? And just sort of throwing himself in the air. And you think about what the atmosphere would be like if he turns up for that champion hurdle. You know, it'll be a sellout crowd for sure, right? And you know, he's going to be surrounded by people, you know, from the moment he arrives at the track. And being a horse, he'll be able to pick up on that electric atmosphere. And I would hate to bet on him, you know, running in a settled and controlled manner and tackling his hurdles in a calm and responsible way. All of the recent evidence points completely in the opposite direction. There's so many people out there, as you say, who are just kind of assuming if he turns up, he's going to, you know, either win or go close. This is a 9-year-old horse. You know, in any circumstances, I think a 9-year-old in the champion hurdle is not a great bet. Mm. And they're basing these opinions on his form from when he was 6 and 7. I slightly feel that my betting should be going better considering how many optimists there are out there, you know?
I do wonder, I know they're in different ownerships, obviously, but I do wonder if we'd be having this debate if poor old Tagino was still, had won the Unibet hurdle, was the odds-on or red-hot favourite for the champion hurdle for Nicky, and obviously the Donnellys own them rather than Michael Buckley, but it may have made, I don't know whether that would have played in Nicky's mind that he'd already have a...
It's easier to move away from the champion hurdle if he's there. But as it is, it looks like a pretty winnable champion hurdle.
Does the fact he's already won one have any bearing? I mean, this occurred to me. Had he never won a champion hurdle and was this brilliant hurdler, you might be more tempted. The fact...
What does he
have to prove over hurdles based off that? All right, a limited window, and we'd love to have seen it extend and him not get these wobbles last season and into this. But is there an element of... Well, he's won one champion hurdle. Is the benefit of winning another one, is that you know, how exciting is that relative to what he could do on the flat?
Well, I think that's a very good point. I mean, that the flat is where the unexplored stuff lies. And it could be a really good adventure based on what we saw at Southall.
Mm. And a great story for us.
You literally don't know where the top of his ability is, despite the fact that he's been around forever. It was interesting to read the comments in the paper the other day from other flat trainers who had been kind of skeptical, wondering why are people getting so excited about this jumps horse running on the flat. And then kind of got blown away by the performance and wished that he was in their yard. I think that's where the future lies. And I completely respect why Nicky and Michael Buckley want to take time and think this over, because once they make the decision this week, it's forever, right? If they skip this champion hurdle, I don't think they're going back to hurdles ever.
Well, I think that's what... There was half a suggestion from Michael Buckley that maybe, it wouldn't necessarily rule out going back over hurdles. But then Nicky Henderson at Kempton, like you say, was very open with the press, and he was saying that if he runs in the champion hurdle, that will be his final run over hurdles, which I almost did read as a concession of... that doesn't fill me with confidence.
No.
Because...
It doesn't sound like he wants to go.
Yeah, because surely were he to win a champion hurdle, you would then...
You don't stop then.
You wouldn't stop.
No. I mean, in fairness, right, if he does come out of Chatham and wins, then a lot of our fears are allayed, right? But until that happens, my fears are through the roof,
That's been a fascinating news story. For all, I'm sure there are corners of the readership and viewership who will say, well, we've had enough Constitution Hill, and why are we still talking about one horse all the time? But it just is, it has been the story. He is the biggest name, and I was so struck by the atmosphere on Friday, Matt. It looked absolutely electric. I believe there was genuine interest in that horse and in the occasion.
Yeah, and it was probably what the Friday Night Live series needed as well, because it got that blend of the younger audience capturing them and the students that it was designed for, but putting on a marquee performer and a public horse from our sport, sort of offering them that pathway, hopefully that pathway to following what Constitution Hill does. If they saw how the atmosphere was absolutely electric. We've had people saying they've never experienced an atmosphere like it, and it's up there with their best atmospheric moments. Mm. That you wouldn't think about that 7 months ago from a little Friday night or weather race at Southall. And I was at the first Friday Night Live series event as well at Newcastle, and for all people, they're right to have they can have their opinion. A few people don't like it, and they think it's just focusing on a dynamic audience that are not going to get into race and are more interested with drinking and betting. But the atmosphere at these meetings are far better than the 50 or 60 people we'd see on the screens on the Friday night during the winter, during the cold months. It gives it a real good sense of purpose, and I thought Constitution Hill boosted it greatly. And having Constitution Hill on the flat was also going to ramp up the great, a romantic narrative for the flat season as well. We're used with the flat season, great horses, but it's a conveyor belt of the best colts go off the stud. Thank the Lord Constitution Hill's not a 4-year-old gelding, given he's got an RPR in the hundreds, because Hong Kong and Australia would be absolutely sniffing around him like wildfire, wouldn't they? He'd be shipped off like there's no tomorrow. So, but it continues, and it ramps up the interest in the sport for both codes if Constitution Hill, continues in the way on the flat throughout the whole year.
He's got real punch through this horse. He's getting talked about by people who don't normally follow racing all that closely. We're sort of slightly back to Desert Orchid days, I think, in that respect. He hasn't quite, nothing will ever have that reach, but he's getting closer to it than any jump source I can remember in the last 10, 15 years. Back to sort of Quarto Denman days. Mm. I understand why people want to be optimistic about what happened at Southall and think, how can we harness this? It might just be a one-off because he's that kind of horse, and he's at that stage in his career when everyone's wanting to talk about him. He's a special beast for sure.
Yeah, he is. And it was quite a rare example. You've been covering the sport for a while now. A rare example of everybody working together, seeing the commercial opportunity for we have this very good horse, seeing the event, marrying up the action on the track with the event. Lo and behold, betting turnover is akin to a feature race on a Saturday. Simon Clare reporting that. You have an event that producer Sam Hart described as being in his top three race course moments. It can be done.
And but also we are still horse racing because we nearly mucked it up completely with the elimination process. Yes. We very nearly got cut out of that race.
Baby steps. It really was a magnificent occasion at Southall for Constitution Hill. And joining us on the line is Lambourne correspondent Liam Head, who was there for all of the fun and games. Liam, describe it for us. What was the atmosphere like?
I was there. It was just incredible, John. I mean, I've done a lot of race courses with the Racing Post for the last few years, and Friday was just truly magical, really. I mean, it just had the whole feel-good atmosphere across the grandstands, really. I mean, to think there was 3,500 people at Southall on Friday night, I think well over more than what the track has had in previous years as well. So it was you know, really, really great atmosphere. And it was just one of those moments where you can, you know, gladly say that you were there for it, really.
And as the man closest to Seven Barrows, do you have any exclusives for us about which way they might be leaning, or are you guessing just as much as the rest of us?
Yeah, unfortunately guessing just like everyone else at the minute. It'll be interesting to see which way they go. Obviously, we've heard from Michael Buckley and Nicky Henston in the aftermath of Friday. Obviously, Michael was on Luck on Sunday yesterday, and it sounds like they're kind of putting the early stages into a flat campaign towards the end of the calendar year. So it's a difficult one. I mean, from my point of view, my head and my heart are telling me two different things. My head's telling me that the right thing to do would be to stay on the flat, but obviously it would be an incredible story if he was to rock up to the Champion Hurdle on day one of the festival and win the race. So listen, we'll know a lot more this week. But it was just a magical night at Southall. I mean, you could, the reaction to the horse coming back into the winner's enclosure was just magical. I mean, you could close your eyes and think you were sort of standing in the winner's enclosure at Cheltenham Festival. I mean, yes, there was 3,500 people there, but I mean, you'd almost feel from the noise that there could have been triple that, given the reaction. And you know, it was the first time where I've been on track, where I've been walking back to the winner's enclosure and seeing hundreds of people running past me just so they could get a glimpse of Nicky Henderson and Constitution Hill. And I think that just tells you everything you really need to know about this horse. He's not had the most straightforward years in training, but he still brings in that crowd, and it's definitely something that the sport needs as well.
It was a fantastic event, and a good example, I think, of Arena Racing Company put the money up, they put the effort in, it was properly promoted. There'll be people who thought it was a little bit sickly sweet, all the, you know, under the lights Constitution Hill, but actually look at the event, look at the reaction to it.
You could see the crowd loving it, couldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely, a good news story. And then we also had some good stories at Kempden on Saturday in the most seamless of pivots to the racing over the weekend. Who stood out for you? I thought Lookaway in the Ladbrokes Trophy was very impressive. A horse who probably won't be going to Cheltenham, but could be a bet 365.
That seemed to be like the theme of the day was, you know, maybe not Cheltenham, but Aintree. So it was just great to see Lookaway getting a big prize because, you know, he'd missed a chunk of his career for one reason or another, having looked really promising right at the beginning. I always really enjoy it when, you know, a yard like Neil King suddenly gets a big day, you know, because there is that feeling that jump racing is sort of sliding more towards the bigger powers. And so, you know, he's not a guy who's sort of winning Saturday races all the time. That's been the most important horse in his yard for a few years, Lookaway. And so it's great that it's worked out for them.
He has a lovely quote as well where he said, "I ride him every day. He's the first horse I say morning to each day."
That's nice, yeah.
And they did miss out. They have had to be patient because he had so much promise as a novice and it just didn't go right for whatever reason. He clearly loves Kempton, so what he could have done in some of those races, who knows?
Yeah, there's an element of what might have been, right? He would have been in a King George maybe by now if things had gone more smoothly. But, you know, I think that's the aspect that you forget in the day-to-day coverage of the sport, because you're always talking about horses that have just run or are just going to run. And the ones that get injured and just stop running for a year to 18 months kind of, you know, disappear below the radar. Meanwhile, the people who are looking after those horses and trying to put them back together have sort of got day after day of, you know, hope and then, you know, despair. You know, long stretches of despair. That's really the underlying narrative of jump racing, I feel. It's maybe not a selling point exactly, right? But, you know, when you see what these people are experiencing in the winner's enclosure, it's because of that. It's because, you know, there's so many difficult days before you get to the good day.
Yeah, and we had a nice spread of winners. I mean, Lucy Wadham looks to have a very smart horse as well.
Yeah, you think we're in that period now where we're so close to Cheltenham that all the focus is on the big guns and the A-team players going there. Whereas Saturday was a real nice opportunity for those yards who don't really get the limelight on ITV to shine and show them what they could do. So Lucy Wadham with Jacks Jr. I think he's a very good horse, to be honest with you, especially around those flat tracks. I know it looks like they're going to go for a crack at the Arkle, but
why not? Why not? Very accurately.
Yeah, I could
for
see,
a novice.
See him running a good big race at Aintree in something like the Manifesto or something like that. But Jane Williams also with La Luna Artista in the Adonis as well. You know, I think Jane said it was a remarkable first Grade Two in her own right. Of course, obviously she was in a partnership with her ex-husband Nick in training partnership there, and they did very well. So it's just, you know, showcasing. British jumps racing does have a good variety of depth. Obviously, Harry Durham, the up and coming youngster, and the young prodigy, winning the Dovecote as well. So it was very good that in this period where Aintree is probably more the focus now, it switches usually after the Ascot Chase weekend, that these yards that normally don't get the limelight get their deserved place, and it's very good.
You hope that people are not being put off by the, you know, having to take on Willie Mullins at Cheltenham, because you know, you only got to think back to, you know, Cheltenham last year, when I think I can't remember how many odds on losers there were, but there were a few, right? You know, when you get to the big day, these big name horses don't always run to expectation, and then it's there to be won by whoever turns up. You know, Golden Ace, prime example. Form experts might be counting you out, but line up and take your chance, because it can happen.
Well, it's like Narciso Hart not going to be seeing the Triumph now, and one of the leading contenders is a horse trained on the beach at Bamborough in Manila's study for Adam Nicol, so that'd be a great story if he wins.
Yeah, there will be plenty of great stories. And just a side note on Kempton, unfortunately there were two fatalities. I think that has now triggered a review, Chris, because there were three at the previous meeting, I believe. It's one of those, isn't it? It could be coincidental, but they have to have a look and just make sure that there isn't a trend there.
Yeah, no, well, we shouldn't preempt it then. You know, I'm pleased that we've got a responsible ruling body that does take these things very seriously. And, you know, that this is not a first. They investigate all of these sad incidents. You know, unfortunately, it is something that can happen, as we know from long experience with racehorses and jump racing in particular. I didn't myself come away with any suspicion that there was anything untoward or had gone wrong particularly. Unfortunately, you can always be unlucky.
Absolutely. Well, it was a busy day. We haven't even mentioned the Ida Chase winner, Kai Ying Rising, over in Hong Kong, doing Kai Ying Rising things.
You were saying Kai Ying Rising had won the Ida.
Yeah, that would be quite something. He's good. He is good.
Yeah, maybe.
He's not quite that good, I don't think. Probably the wrong trip.
How would you price him up? 7-4? Maybe. Depend on the weight he gets, obviously.
Depend on the ground, you know.
Yeah.
Great performances there, but I do want to talk about the Bobby Joe Chase, which you might say is the most informative of the races we saw at the weekend. Grange Clare West winning for the first time in what feels like forever, Matt.
Yeah, December 2023 was the last time he won before that. It was in a Grade One. I liked it. I was also equally frustrated because I did think he'd win the National last year until he decided to chew his way through the last fence, which he did in the Bobby Joe as well, and he seems to get away with murder doing it all the time.
Was that his fault, though? I'm blaming Jerry Colomb for that one.
Yeah, I think he just might have.
Explain.
He did jump across him a little bit. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt.
I think he has.
I haven't backed him for the National, in case you're wondering.
I think he has one minor brain fade in him, and not that he falls, but it was a little bit costly. But he still ran a storm in the National last year.
The Grand National is a race where you can kind of get away with that stuff, maybe more than you would expect to at Fairyhouse, to
and
be
he's,
honest.
He's probably sort of got the perfect profile for it, and being that he's a Grade One winner and is, well, sort of in his pomp. He was off for a fair while after that, but he's been running stormers in last year's Irish Gold Cup, ran a really good race in the Savills Chase as well, so he's a bona fide, solid Grade One performer, maybe not an out and out Grade One winner and right at the top class level, but you think to those horses like Nick Rocket, I Am Maximus. They are those. They've got that. Those are the races sort of shapes of nowadays. You have to be that sort of, have that real class edge to it. I loathe to say a grade one and a half horse, it's so cliche, but one that's done well or won a grade one before and then has just been below the very top of 3 mile chases. It seems to be.
Well, the first three for the last 2 years have carried, what was it, 11.4 or more? Mm. It's just a different race to the one that I grew up watching. Grange Clare West, I think, he got cast in his box, didn't he, on the morning of the Dublin Racing Festival when he was a novice chaser. Mm. And at that point, I was backing him anti-post for anything. And also when he came back. And I think this year's Grand National is basically the first race where I haven't backed him at all, because he just finally thought, you know. And that is
there
why.
We know what's going to happen now.
Totally. I've been in Jonah for the poor horse. You and me, can we share the burden on
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely.
I've slightly felt sad for him. You know, I felt like he deserved to be taken a bit more seriously than he has been. If he'd been in a different yard, he'd been the apple of their eye. You know, he'd be their number one horse. You'd maybe have heard more about him. But when you're sort of third or fourth on the pecking list in any division at Willie Mullins' yard, you tend to sort of drop below the radar. But he's well in for the National now. You know, come the day, all those rating services are bound to sort of flag him up, because having done what he did on Saturday, he now looks like he's got in a few pounds light. And so,
just a bit of credit to Jerry Colomb as well. That was a brilliant run. Sort of, we knew he was high class before, and then he was off, and it was nice to see him bounce back to his near his best. It's lovely when these sort of high class performers start to come back to the best.
It was, and I am going to just a word for Paul Townend's ride between us as well, because look, we're running out of ways to praise him. He is the man for those big races. The way he rode Grange Clare West was so unbelievably relaxed. I'm not even sure he had to use his whip at all. He just smuggled him into the race, and
yeah,
I thought it was just an exceptional ride.
Was good ride. I mean, I sort of remember watching the National last year and feeling that, you know, he, just because of the way the race worked out, he got drawn into the heat of battle a bit earlier than was ideal. And, you know, maybe if, you know, he'd been a bit further back, sort of where the eventual winner was, things might have been different. It'd be difficult for Paul Townend now, because, I mean, he's going to have options, obviously, in the National, including a previous winner of the race, which is always hard to get off. And then Grange Clare West, who's done that the other day. I would think he might be leaning towards him. And, you know, I'd just about make them favourite if he does choose Grange Clare West. You know, Rocco's sort of had his go, and he's higher in the weights this time. And yeah, I think you'd probably go with the Mullins horse that would be a grade one horse at any other yard, you know.
It's a lovely problem to have, isn't it?
Yeah. First world problems,
I mean, on the
sure.
Grand National weights, they obviously came out last week, a nice event up in Liverpool, as is always the case. What were the key news lines for you, Matt? What stood out to you?
The Iron Maximus top weight again.
That would be some achievement, were you to win off that.
Yeah, it would be. And I thought he ran an absolute storm in the race last year as well.
Did, yeah.
Off, I think, £1 lower, so. And he's been in all right form this season. He's second in the Savills.
Good form, really good form.
You know, not, wouldn't say eye-catching run in the Irish Gold Cup, but it wasn't one you'd dismiss him of, that, you know, he could still go and run up.
It's such a rare thing to do, though, to win a National, get beat in a National, and then win it back. I mean, I think it's Red Run did it. I think he might be the only one since the 19th century. And there were maybe a couple of horses, but it was just a different race in those days. You know, it was, they would run over a section of ploughed field, and there'd be 50
jumping
horses.
Jumping semi-detached houses, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's sort of historically improbable, but he absolutely has the talent, doesn't he, to do it?
He does. The other eye-catching ones, the VHA handicappers, seemingly having a little bit of a, not a battle, but queries around Iroko. They found him one of the most difficult horses to assess, and I get that. He's been running in small field graduation.
Is he always one of the most difficult horses to assess? I'm convinced I'm forever talking about this horse as being some sort of handicap blot at all times.
He did run in the Grand National last year, didn't he? He was seventh, wasn't he? But still, I don't think, I'm not crying for the handicappers over that one. No. They get scared of the silks, don't they? The green and gold silks, they feel like they have to hedge their bets about, oh, this one might be better than I thought.
I suppose it is hard to gauge. He has been running, and like you say, he has run in two small field.
Really gets really classy horses.
Yeah,
the Duke's Man, King George winner, and beating Firefox. He ran a storm in the Irish Gold Cup as well. So,
and just before we came on, Matt, you were talking about another horse who's caught your eye potentially as a sign for the growing quality in the race, perhaps?
Panic Attack. Exactly that. Panic Attack. I think a few people have mentioned her. You know, I've said it's remarkable that the winner of a Paddy Power Gold Cup and a Coral Gold Cup, obviously as it known as in the old days of the Mackeson and the Hennessy, can't seemingly be guaranteed a place in the field at this stage.
It's crazy.
It shows you how the Grand National has changed in terms of it's now for this calibre of higher class horses who may fall shy of Cheltenham Gold Cup standard, but are still pretty solid Grade 1 performers, albeit not winners of them, but really good Grade 1 performers. You know, she needs a... I think she will get in, but she still does need a fair handful to come out. But I think it's absolutely remarkable. I think...
If you want to run in the National off the bottom of the weights, I suppose you have to put up with this threat for, you know, a few weeks that you might actually miss the cut. If she does get locked out of the race, then that's a major indictment of the decision to go to 34 runners a couple of years ago. I mean, I didn't like it anyway. I still don't like it now. But honestly, if we're ruling out horses like her, that's just self-defeating, terrible look for the race. We're just reducing the fun for ourselves, aren't we?
Yeah, interesting. And I won't ask you for a selection unless you have one.
I think if she gets in, she's got some chance.
Okay.
As a Coral Gold Cup winner. Thinking back to the days, great days of Many Clouds. Decade ago.
I think he might still be the only one who's won both races, but yeah. The trends aren't with you. But no. You know, trends schmends, right?
Yeah, exactly that.
Trends schmends.
It's all for breaking.
And Chris, you said you were agonisingly having a look last night. You have time, don't worry. With Cheltenham first.
I went with Nick Rockett thinking, you know, the only reason he hasn't run is they just don't want to expose him to getting bumped up the ratings before the weights get set. And then around about the times when the weights get set, we find out, in fact, he's toiling to be fit and they might not even have him ready for Cheltenham. So that's a blow. I've already lost some money on the race. It's nothing out of the ordinary. I'm more familiar with the experience of, you know, backing something that shortens and then unseats at the first.
It's a familiar one to me.
One way or another, it's not been a very lucky race for me since Seagram. I don't know. Something of that era. I'm due one, you know?
Yeah, exactly. We live in hope. I have absolutely no idea. So please, viewers, write in, message, tell us who's going to win the National, because we, between us, have no clue.
Wisdom of crowds, yeah, exactly.
Moving on to Lord Allen, independent board, governance, all the heavy stuff. Just Groundhog Day, isn't it? With this sort of falling out over data rights, the race courses aren't willing to sign off on an independent board, and which was a prerequisite for Lord Allen taking the role. Unless they have assurances over that. The Thoroughbred Group siding with Lord Allen and saying, if you concede ground to the racecourses, we won't be happy either. This is the hill we're prepared to die on. It all just feels like more of the same.
So maybe it was rash of us to expect that the whole culture would change suddenly. But it did feel like some of the arguments that we're continuing to have were agreed on last year. So it is dismaying to hear that there's some backsliding going on. You know, very horse racing, as we said earlier. You know, in a way you'd be disappointed if it was otherwise. But it did seem like we were making progress, and now, in fact, we're back to the old days of nobody giving an inch, and everybody guarding their own particular interest. Give him some more time. You know, he's not been all that long involved with the sport. I'm sure he's still learning about it and its people. I suppose there's still a chance, fingers crossed, that some sort of political backroom fudge can be worked out.
It just felt like such an odd hill to die on. I mean, race day data, it is important in the sense it's, as a principle, I suppose it's important, but as an actual thing, it's fairly minor in the grand scheme of things. It just struck me as odd that you would choose to stick, you know, draw your line in the sand on something like this before you have the independent board in place. And it's just a frustration for me, as every corner of the sport said, yeah, we need the BHA to be more commercial, we need to get rid of this power of veto and all the rest of it, this kind of idea of basically the
work together more,
yeah, we need to work
for the good
more
of the sport,
we need to be more commercial, we need to, yeah, we're all signed up, great, Lord Allen's coming in, how fantastic. The first minor hurdle relating to something commercial and we are at a complete standstill, and you just think, what a waste of time. If Lord Allen leaves his post, which the suggestion is his position becoming untenable? Or yeah, if that were to happen, what a phenomenal waste of time with a back and forth with appointing
him and
everything
else. Yes, a waste of time. But then who's going to be mad enough to take the job next after his experience?
Especially if it's a relative, Lord Allen's a relative outsider of the sport. If you're an outsider looking in, you're seeing that racing is simply ungovernable.
That, unfortunately, is how we're beginning to look. So, like I say, this project, I think, has to be given more time to work, because the alternative is just too depressing for words.
And there's the silence. We obviously put questions to all of the key stakeholders saying, do you support the independent board? Do you support Lord Allen? Various permutations you'll have read in online and in print. And to get nothing back. Now, I appreciate there's probably an argument that these things are best done behind closed doors and maybe we don't declare our position, but I don't believe personally the lack of transparency around it is doing any favours either. It just feels like you're just having your own little private squabbles. Meanwhile, the sport's remaining in exactly the same place it was.
People are disappearing back into their own silos.
Yeah, and that's it. Yeah. It is. You know, it's this standoff between racecourses and participants. There's too much mistrust, too much of the same. You know, it's essentially a repetition of a theme, isn't it, this? There's nothing new. I feel as though I've been reporting on this for my entire time here, so I'd imagine you're feeling the same.
Oh, we've got 100%. Yeah, well, we can but hope, but that particular issue, the fact that there was no response coming at all, it wouldn't give you much encouragement that things are going to change anytime soon, would it?
I'm not sure it would fly in other sports. I don't know.
Well, I don't think it would. I don't think it would, especially at... It's galling now, to be honest with you. The best sort of commercial, well, best relationships in any walk of life, whether it be working, commercial, even personal, you have to cede a bit of, you know, power and responsibility to work for the greater good of stuff and to keep, you know, to keep things moving forward and keep being fruitful. It just seems like racing is completely incapable of doing that. And this is at a time when we should all really be feel good, building up to the Cheltenham Festival, building up to the Grand National, the big spring of the sport where we've got the best chances to showcase ourselves. Yet we have this shadow over us that the sport is just simply just stalemate again.
And on that cheery note, that's all we have time for in this week's episode of The Front Page. All that's left for me to do is to say a big thank you to Chris and Matt for joining me. I hope you'll be able to join us next week. Thanks again for watching.